Welcome to 94 and More, presented by Bristol Studio. While a basketball court might be 94 feet, we believe it's limiting to solely look at this beautiful game as a sport. In our minds, it's closer to an art form, even a tool through which we can study the world and learn about ourselves. I'm your host, Jake Fenster, and on this podcast, we will explore the game of basketball, not only as a sport, but as a dynamic force that influences culture, builds bridges, and has the ability to shape our national conversation. Hope you enjoy. As always, feel free to reach out to us at 94@bristol-studio.com and follow us on Instagram at Bristol Studio and at 94 and More Podcast. All right, let's get into the show. Today, I am here with Vic. Vic, how are you doing?
Yeah, bro, I'm doing great. I'm pretty happy we just got off a little losing skid there, and we're finally back in the winning seat, so it feels good.
What was, in your opinion, like, what was some of the stuff that was going on that was contributing to that, like, what losing streak you guys had?
I think there's a lot of things, man. You know, like, the season has been so interesting because, you know, we had the huge road trip. It's obviously just being on the road the whole time. But then coming back, and you might think it's, like, easier coming back home and, you know, get your routines back. But, you know, it's even more pressure because – in this league, everyone wants to beat Perth. Everyone wants to play in the arena with all the fans. And that's like their Super Bowl every game, right? Like the teams that are in the playoffs, teams that are vying for playoff spots, and even the bottom teams, you come to that arena and you're playing as hard as you possibly can for the entire game. Because as long as you win in that arena, like, you know, you feel some sort of accomplishment. But I don't know, like we had some back and forth, like our third import spot. That just might have been a distraction with the team. We have had injuries, like just a ton of stuff, right? And I think it's good that we finally got back on the horse and got things rolling again because it has been a long season, but I think we're finally starting to trend back upwards.
What are some of those things, I guess, like from a basketball standpoint, right? Like some of the things that you guys noticed you corrected in this last game that finally got you out of that slump?
I think we started playing better defense, honestly. Like, I think before our defense just had kind of been – I think our effort was there, but I think it like, playing with kind of, like, some basketball intelligence and executing our game plan, it just wasn't there. And specifically me, I think, you know, just down the stretch of some of these games, like, I was making some critical errors that definitely could have been avoided, like, as either gambling for a steal or just trying to make the home run play instead of saying, like – solid, you know, throughout the whole defensive possession. And, you know, usually I'm one of the key guys or impacting the defense in such a way that, you know, I can't really afford to be doing that. So, you know, just, you know, the one thing I've always, you know, thought this season is just control what you can control. And, you know, as long as I'm doing my part in trying to help, you know, keep my spot on the floor right, you know, I'm helping my team. And I just feel like the last couple of games, I've just been a little bit too undisciplined defensively to really constitute winning.
I think that is really important. I think, you know, you're talking about holding yourself accountable. And I think if you look at your numbers statistically, you're, what, probably having your best professional season, basically?
Probably second best. I would say my season on Orlando is probably my best.
Statistically.
Orlando is probably my best.
Yeah. Oh, you're right there then. And you're mm-hmm. – you know, you're playing a lot of minutes. This is your back off of your surgery. You know, it's a full year in.
Right.
Like, I think that's really incredible that you have the ability to still hold yourself accountable for that. Like, where do you think that started? You think that's something you've always kind of been, like, hard on yourself, holding yourself accountable no matter what, like, always looking at the things you could have done better? Like, where did that come from?
Well, I think just from an early age, like, my family's really big into basketball. I'm from a basketball family. And I just remember when I was younger, like good game, bad game, you know, my sister and my parents were always super tough on me no matter what I did, like good or bad, like their criticism and their, you know, notes from the game were always pretty heavy. And so now I don't really feel right unless I'm like giving myself those same game notes. And growing up as a basketball player, like, you know, as you know, I was always like the glue guy or defensive guy.
Yeah,
on the team. Like, I wasn't really.
Yeah,
I wasn't like the number one scoring option my whole career, and even now I'm not the number
can't
one.
Can't be 3-and-D without the three. You know,
no, well, you can't. That's a quote that'll live with me forever. But you know, I just was never really counted on, like, to score like that. And so earlier in my career, like, I impacted the game was defensively, you know, getting blocked, getting steals, guarding up. Like, that's how I felt like I could really impact the game. And so now, like, you know, I don't want to lose that side of me and being a two-way player. You know, I'm happy the offense is definitely there, but, you know, defensively is really where I, like, take a lot of my pride.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, I'm no professional basketball player, but let me tell you, I play defense.
Yeah, it's the hard hat of me. That's the game right there. Yeah.
You just can't not play defense. I don't know. There's something about the mentality, right, of, you know, everyone wants to be an offensive player. It's sexier. Mm-hmm. You know, you putting up 30 points looks better than something that doesn't show up in the stat sheet. You know, if you're just guarding somebody well, defending off ball, you know, rotating, helping, like, to an untrained basketball eye, that's not going to get much attention.
And there are a lot of untrained basketball eyes.
Yes.
You
just see people put up 35 or 45 and, like, that gets all the attention. But, you know, I think there's something about the defensive integrity, right? Like, actually caring about stopping somebody, taking that, mm-hmm. that ownership, you know, playing for your team. There's something in that I think is really important. And, like, for you, you're saying that was always the thing that you valued and had, you know, placed an emphasis on, but, like, how that happened? Like, was there a coach or anything that you remember that stood out and was, like, drilled that into you? Or do you think, is that just inherent? You just felt that way from the jump, the first time you touched a basketball?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like it might've just been inherent that I just really wanted to play defense, and it could have just been the way I was brought up. You know, like I said, I was never really the guy. Even on my, like, middle school teams, like, you know, I played on a team with a coach's son. And, you know, the coach wanted to put the ball in his son's hands and do stuff like that. So, you know, my dad was never the type to really be, like, you know, get all in coach's face and things. So the way he would tell me to fight the game is if I was open shooter, but really to play defense and to do what I could, rebound the hell out of the ball, defend. Like, those are all things you can control, right? Like, a coach can't stop you from doing that stuff. And just kind of growing up, like, especially being from Chicago, I feel like when you're going to the parks, you're playing one-on-ones or whatever. Like, it's just, you take a pride in, like, not letting somebody score on you, right? Like, that's just, like, the thing. And I remember back in the day, like, shit, I wasn't scoring either, but I know my guy wasn't going to score. And so, you know, maybe that's just something, like, that I inherently was grown up with and, like, kind of brought up on. But, you know, I also, like, back in the day, I used to always love Jordan and Pippen, and maybe, like, Pippen a little bit more. I don't know as much now, you know, with what Scottie's been doing, but I remember back in the day, like, I used to love seeing those two play defense, and, like, I knew the offense was always there, and I knew that was cool, and the dunks and everything, but I just loved how they defended and how they got all the steals and got on the fast break.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point, and I think maybe, you know, I guess you could probably point to players that didn't play a lot of defense still in any era or, you know, from that era, but I think when you also look at basketball today, the way it's changed, right? It's so offensive, or it's so, the offensive player is favored extremely.
It's offensive, yeah. Exactly.
You know, free throw line for every little tic tac call. They kind of adjusted that, thank God, because last year was pretty brutal to watch. Like, Trae Young just pump faking and everyone flying and jumping into them. But
you know, it's funny. Why is he the, like, the poster boy of that?
Sorry, he just popped in my head.
Harden and Embiid still shoot tons of free throws.
James Harden,
like, some of those same calls.
James Harden was really my least favorite to watch, to be honest, because he really sold it. At least Trae actually, like, used the rule in his favor and, like, jumped into the contact. James Harden, when you watch him sometimes, is, like, selling it, which I guess is still, you know, playing into the rule, but that was harder. That's just harder for me to watch. I don't really enjoy watching that. Not taking anything away from his game, but, like, there was a point where it was really out of hand. But I guess what I was saying was, looking at the game today, the offensive player is so favored that it's like, you can not play defense and, you know, get away with it a little bit in the NBA if you're that good of an offensive, you know, player.
Right.
That is something that will continue. Like, you think this new era of kids kind of growing up, like, will grow into be more offensive players just because of the way the game is set up? Do you think that's part of just the current culture of basketball?
So I don't know. I feel like, and what you're saying, yes, I think basketball as a sport is evolving into much more of a like an offensive game. Like the freedom of movement stuff is definitely geared to the offense. Like the spacing of the game. Now, like you're seeing, like, I don't want to say the death of the center, but like, unless you're super gifted on the low post, like now everyone wants to be five out. And just different, right? Like people are valuing analytics and shooting more threes and all that stuff more. So I would say in to a part of your argument, yes, like offense definitely is something that is needed and the game is like gearing towards. But I'll also say, like, when you look at some of the highest paid like players in the NBA, like outside of your stars, right? Like take the stars out, right? And you're looking at role guys. The role guys that get paid the most are the ones that play defense, right? Because on every NBA team or professional team, you got your one or two scorers and you need the other guys to play defense. Like you need to play defense or be able to shoot the three at like such a great, you know, clip. So I would, you know, my like argument to tell younger players is, you know, you need to develop offensively and you need to develop your game as best you can. But defensively, like there's a need for that, right? Because the game is shifting towards offense. There is such an innate need for defenders and people that can try and stop the players that are like working so heavily on their offensive game.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. And I think it's actually a good transition because I know our last episode with Tino, we spoke a bit about, you know, different coaching styles, specifically in college basketball and the tournament. We all kind of had our picks and went through our brackets. What do you think about some of these guys that are, you know, the next group of NBA players, this draft class? Like, is there anyone that kind of sticks out to you? And like, what about their game sticks out to you?
Yeah, I didn't really watch college basketball. It's tough.
Fair enough.
I should have this year. Fair enough. Well, I did watch the tournament. And there's a ton of guys that I love. Like, I liked Banchero from Duke. I feel like this draft is just full of, like, you know, long, versatile forwards. And it's really interesting, like, you know, there's a lot of ambiguity around the 1, 2, and 3 picks. But I do get to, you know what, I can speak about it. I do get to play against guys like Ousmane Dieng and Hugo Bisson. Like, we played them last night. And they're both in the draft class. And Luke Travers, who's on my team, is in this upcoming draft class. And, you know, I think there's a lot of talent up and coming in. I think what you're seeing now in basketball, and especially the NBA, is like a need for versatile forwards. Like, I still feel like that's like the hot position. It's like a long, versatile athlete who can kind of guard the 2 through the 4, maybe even the 5, like they're that, you know, big and athletic to move that way. But I think when teams are like looking at attractive body types and positions, they want like a 3-4 that can really kind of move up and down the scale of position and guard multiple positions and shoot and dribble. You know, it's not so much like kind of little guards anymore.
Yeah.
And like I said, as far as centers go, like you really have to be like super special. Like you have to be, I want to say like 20 and 10 a night. Like you got to be like almost an automatic basket if they give you the ball in the post. And so it's interesting, like kind of seeing who the draft like favors, like when they do their like rankings and stuff. But you can see in this draft class, like the 1 through 3 are all versatile long athletes who
it's can play
the 4 or 5, maybe the 3. Yeah.
Four of the top 5 are power forwards, and the point guard is, you know, that people have is Jaden Ivey is 6'4". And I think you're right. I think it is really interesting. And I'm curious what your thoughts are on Chet Holmgren, because I haven't watched a lot of him. But I think just looking at his game and like his build, he's such a unicorn. Like, it just, what are your takeaways from watching him, you know, a little bit in the tournament? Like, where, how do you see him fitting into the NBA?
It's interesting because I feel like everyone's kind of got this like enigma around like how he looks. Like, he's super skinny. He's kind of hunched over. Yeah. So I'm sure like once he stands like all the way up, like he's probably like 7'1", 7'2". But, you know, he averaged 14, 10, and 2. And it looks like, you know, he shot 60%, 40% from 3. Like, I don't know. That's just like a quick little, like, anyone can like Google those stats. But hold on, I watched actually a couple of their games. And it seems like he understands like how to play off the ball. And I guess maybe that's like a Gonzaga thing. Like, you know, he doesn't really need the ball and they run a system where everyone's moving. But it's good because I feel like once he gets drafted to whatever team he gets drafted to, I'm hoping he gets drafted to a team that has like playmakers, right? Where he doesn't have to be like the guy, you know, right away, where they don't just have to give it to him, say, all right, now you have to score 30 a night. Because that role can get very intimidating and, you know, pressure packed pretty early. But, you know, I feel like the way he plays, if he can be a lob threat, if he can be a guy that can play off spacing and other really good playmakers, like, I feel like he'll be really good. Like, maybe he'd be really good on the Pistons or the Thunder because they already have playmaking, right? You have Cade on the Pistons, and then you have Giddy and Shea on the Thunder. So I think kind of going against them, like, you look at his body, like, I feel like with age, he'll fill out. He'll naturally get bigger in the NBA. Maybe he grows into his body a little bit more, right? Like, he's still super young. So, you know, I don't think he's that much of a boom or bust pick. Like, I feel like Chet will be pretty good for quite some time.
I think what you're talking about, though, it just applies on a deeper level to all players and, like, really all sports. You're talking a lot more about fit, you know, not being, not forcing him into a position that he's not comfortable being, but allowing him to play his game, which has a unique game and ability. And he is, you know, 7'1" with, you know, whatever his wingspan is, and he can move and rotate and help. Like, he's, and he clearly has the knowledge, like, basketball IQ.
Right.
So what we're talking about is any player really can go into the wrong situation and end up not working out. And I guess I think then I want to jump into the NBA anyways, which is a good segue. You know, the Lakers. I have to do this, and I just I didn't want to do it, but I feel like we talked about this at the beginning of the year. The Lakers just blew my mind with how they played basketball. Like, I really
just blew your mind, huh?
It was just hard to watch, miserable to watch. I don't remember the last time I've seen, like, we had bad Lakers teams. 100%. Yeah, you know, in the last, 10 years. And but this one, to me, really did stand out. And I think it's because we have LeBron James and, you know, Russell Westbrook, Anthony Davis. I know people were hurt and not lineups, and we had the most lineups ever. But I don't really remember, at least to my memory, a team that would be down by 30 points so much. Just and not just be down, but, like, not look like they wanted to try to come back. That was hard to watch. And I think that feels like a lot of it has to do with fit, you know, who they have in there around LeBron James. LeBron James was having to put up 50 points for them to win games or be competitive. And it's just, you know, I think what you're talking a lot about and this conversation is kind of leading to is there's so much more than just talent, right? Like, in the NBA level, like, everybody's talented, like, the system, they're the type of players that are brought into the system, you know, from your experience, how much do you think that had to really do with the Lakers season being such a bust and them falling out of, you know, play the bubble, not even the playing game, not the bubble, the playing game.
Well, I'll answer that, but I want to ask you a question first. So, kind of going with what Anthony Davis said, they have more starting lineups than they did wins. Do you think if you take out a lot of those injuries, do you think the Lakers are a high seed in the playoffs?
I don't think they're a high seed. I really don't.
But you think
even when they were healthier, right? Even if they had everybody, they didn't look great. And that looked like chemistry, fit, energy. You could watch body language, like, they kind of pointed at each other. And to me, that's always a bad sign. Like, I don't care. I don't mind losing games. Like, I think losing can be good at times because it can force you to wake up and, like, adjust. But when you watch sometimes how they lost and the way that they hung their heads or, like, kind of, like, pointed at each other when mistakes were made.
Right.
That, to me, was alarming, no matter how healthy they were. You know, you can look at it from a one-game standpoint where they're healthy. Like, they never looked super dominant in any one category at any point of any game, to be honest. Like, that I can say, oh, I never looked at them and said, if we play like this, we're a championship team this season. I don't remember that once. I remember that last season earlier on in the year when they were, like, I think the first in the West, and then there were some injuries and they kind of fell apart. Totally. I can see that. But this year, it just didn't feel the same. But your turn.
Yeah, man, I think chemistry and fit definitely play a role in the whole grand scheme of things. Like, I feel like I think everyone can kind of allude to this. I feel like LeBron plays the best around shooters. And I think, like, I personally love Westbrook. But I feel like a lot of people didn't really like the move when it first happened because LeBron has never showed, like, in his career, I feel like, the propensity to be off the ball. Like, he's not really an off the ball guy, right? Like, he usually, especially now in this phase of, like, his game, like, it's shifted to being the point guard or someone that brings the ball up and carries the ball a lot. And I feel like Westbrook is also a ball dominant guard. And so it was always going to be an interesting dynamic and one that I was very intrigued to see how Vogel and the Lakers going to use as to, okay, are they going to take turns in doing this? Are they going to share the load? Like, how are they going to use LeBron off the ball? Like, will he post up more? I think they found, like, a little bit of something in that little stretch there when LeBron was center. Like, I'm sure LeBron didn't want to play five because that's super taxing. You're probably going to have to guard NBA centers. But, like, they were – in that little stretch, they went on a little wing run when he was the five, and they just played with pace and space. You know, like, that was something that worked for them.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. Like, I feel like in terms of building around your best player, I guess, like, obviously Anthony Davis not being there hurt, right? But also I'm going with that. It didn't help that Anthony Davis didn't shoot the ball that well this year. Like, he still put up his numbers. But he didn't really shoot the ball that well from three or really, like, his jump shots didn't fall as much. Westbrook had a down year shooting, like, outside jumpers. And so when you couple that with also some of the other – players they had to funnel in on minimal deals, like the lane was a lot more clogged for LeBron to drive. Like, it just put a lot more miles on his body than I'm sure he wasn't really looking for at this stage.
Yeah.
But I don't know, like, I feel like they needed a consistent number two. And for a while there was Malik Monk. Then, like, I think Westbrook tried to, like, step up, you know, as number two. But, like, you know, they just needed a consistent guy that could kind of take pressure off LeBron, like, and make shots. And then ultimately, like, they didn't defend anybody, right? Like, they weren't good defensively. And I feel like another reason people were pretty upset was because they traded all their defense away in the offseason. Like, they didn't want to sign Caruso. They traded Caldwell Pope. So that's their wing defenders right there.
Yeah.
Who else left? I mean, Kuzma. Kuzma actually looked better defensively this year. Like, Kuzma had a pretty good year this year. So, you know, I don't know, like, the Lakers could have done – you could say Lakers could have done anything, right? Like, you could say any organization could have made X, Y, and Z change. Like, you can always be the backseat driver. But, you know, they made what they did, and I'm happy they went with that full speed. It just so happened to not work out this season.
And I want to be fair, and maybe you can speak on this a little bit because you have your own injury experience. You know, how taxing is it to go through these – you know, for AD to go through all these injuries, to constantly be rehabbing – you know, not just physically, but mentally, how taxing is that to have to fight back over and over and over again?
Man, that shit sucks. Like, you know, no one's planning to go into a season. Like, you don't work your ass off in the summer or the off season to then go in and get hurt. Like, you know, that shit sucks. And mentally, it's just so fatiguing because you're in this constant cycle of getting back, getting back, getting back. And I know it's just an athlete, and I know it's a professional athlete, especially in L.A., with the fans, how they are, the media is going, doing, saying whatever. Like, you want to come back. Like, you just want to come back, right? Like, maybe you don't take as much time as you need to always get back 100%. But you're like, as soon as the doctor's like, yeah, you're good, you're like, okay, I'm ready. Like, you know, I'm out there, right? Because you want to help your teammates. And you're like, F this. Like, we're going to win. And, I'm back now. But, you know, sometimes it's in the best interest to, like, kind of sit out your body 100%. So when you do go back out there, there's no chance of – re-injury, you're 100% confident in the way you move and the way you feel, and you're not limited. So, I mean, the injuries are taxing. I mean, you can't really predict them, right? Like, I hate when people are like, oh, he's always hurt. Like, oh, like, and I feel like the way they try to shape it is as if athletes are trying to get hurt. Like, you know, that's no, it's not, you know, we don't put our bodies on the line to get hurt. Having surgery sucks. Like, being in a cast sucks. So no one, like, wants to put their body through that. But, you know, it is very draining. So I feel for him, and I'm sure it's draining being who he is in L.A.
Yeah, L.A. fans, we are ruthless. I will say that. You know, and I think also to your point, I know we've talked about this, I think even on the show before. Then how much falls on your preparation in the off season to prevent, obviously you cannot prevent all injuries, right? But there are sometimes things that you are doing that you don't know you're doing that can make you more susceptible to different types of injuries. And I think we had this conversation after you, after you had your surgery, you had to like relearn how to walk and, you know, the right way and put pressure on your joints the right way and not be wearing them down, but actually, you know, set them up in a way that you can really maximize your physical ability. How much of that pressure then falls on an Anthony Davis or just any player really to, if this is a constant, like kind of chronic problem you're seeing, to adjust that in the off season and work towards, you know, some sort of fix? Is that easier said than done?
Yeah. I mean, as an athlete, you know, definitely as a professional athlete, it's on you to make sure your body works at its the best of its ability. Right. And as we all know, the saying, our bodies are temple, and you know, you should take care of your temple to the best of your ability, but it's on us to, as athletes, to make sure we're in the best physical condition. So to prevent injuries or to prevent stuff like that, but sometimes stuff's freak accidents, right? Like you can't work out in the summer and prevent someone stepping on your foot or you rolling your ankle on someone's foot. Like you can't, like those are accidents. Like you, there's nothing you can do about that. Or like someone elbows you in the face and you get a concussion. Like those are things that you can't really game plan for, right? Like, I don't know. Like a lot of people are saying Anthony Davis gained too much weight, but I don't know. Like that's not for me to comment on. Like if he felt like he needed to gain weight, play better, than that's what him and his like people felt the need to do. But I just know, like, I feel like when he hurt his ankle, like he came down on somebody's foot.
Yeah.
And that's like an accident you can't prevent. Like you can't say in the summer, oh, on December 21st, like make sure this dude doesn't put his foot out when I shoot. You know, like it's stuff like that. Like you can't really, like you can't plan for that, you know? And if half the people that were talking about like and complaining about his injuries got out there, I'm sure they would get hurt every time they went out there. Or they would understand, like, after every game you have, like, something nagging about you. Like, there's not – usually not many games you come out of the game. If it's a hard-fought game, like, it's scot-free, like, no pain anywhere.
Yeah. No, I think it's just important, you know, because a lot of times you don't hear this perspective or people aren't given the ability to, like, freely voice this. If they do, they're kind of seeing it off, and especially, like, in the media and being a Los Angeles Laker, you know. The scrutiny is kind of always there and forever ongoing unless you're winning a championship. So I think hearing this perspective and kind of hearing like from your side of things, what that really is like, what goes into it all. And at the end of the day, some of it is out of your control. Some of it is just like freak accidents. And, you know, it does take a lot of mental fortitude to work through it, to fight back, to even get on the basketball court. After going through some of those things. So I think, you know, just important to keep that perspective. But, you know, I appreciate you taking the time to do
this. Hold on now, Jay. We got to, you know, I now that you're in Hollywood, you're around movie people, you're not going to ask you about the slap.
The slap? You mean Will Smith? We're not talking about Will Smith slapping nobody.
Of course. That's what I'm
talking about. Talking about Will Smith.
People need to hear the fencer.
No one wants to hear that.
Reaction.
I don't
Were
care.
Were you watching that live?
No, I was, and then I got up into my apartment, so I lost it, and then everyone was freaking out, and I found the video. I didn't think it was real. I was like, yeah, that's crazy, but I don't know. I don't really want to get into it. I just think that the theory of like Will Smith like laughed and then looked at Jada, and Jada happy, and then he went up and slapped him. Just makes it kind of.
Yeah.
Like
he thought, that's what I thought it was crazy. He thought it was funny. Like he was definitely kind of with. First of all, the joke wasn't really that good. Like it was like a G.I. Jane. It was all right. Like it was like a you look like this person kind of joke. Like great. Like that's not like that insulting. But seeing Will like kind of like go with the joke, especially in a setting like that where it's their job to kind of egg people on, and then you know Jada's like taken aback by it. Like you see her reaction, and. I don't know. The whole thing, Chris having his hands behind his back, Will kind of yelling and then giving the speech. And I feel like kind of like doubling down on like, I had to do it. I don't know.
I mean,
I told Carla, if it was me and I knew I was like, say I was up for like MVP award, right? And I knew I was going to win it. And someone said a joke like, oh, like Carla, you're ugly. Like, and I laughed. And Carl looked at me like, you know, you got to do something. I would have definitely waited. until I got the award.
After the, like,
I would have went in the back and be like, come on, man, you know.
Yeah.
That was funny, but you chill out.
I mean, that's the thing, right? Like, you can't, you know, he reacted in a moment. It's an emotional reaction. It's not, you don't know what people are going through, and, you know, who knows what conversations they've had privately about what's going on. And, you know, Will Smith, I mean, Chris Rock made a joke, and whatever happened, and, you know, he has to live with that and the decision he made and whatever consequences.
Does this hurt his legacy?
I don't think so. I mean, dude, he's Will Smith. He's Will Smith.
Does it hurt his legacy?
I don't think so. To who? Who's defining his legacy? Like, everyone? Like,
to you? If you're as a movie fan.
No, Will Smith, not like, really. I mean, I think it's just, it was a silly move, but, like, if that's what he felt he had to do in the moment, like, you know, he's apologized, and who knows what their actual conversation was like behind closed doors. I'm not privy to whatever conversations Will and Jada have had. So, you know, it's just, do I think it's how I would have handled the situation? No, but I'm not him, and I'm not on that stage, and I don't, you know, again, I don't know what their conversations are like, but, you know, I think I would have liked to imagine I would handle it like you said. If you have a problem with what somebody said, all right, you know, you go back there and you handle it, you communicate how you're feeling, and you move on. Because I think the one thing that was really upsetting about it was, I think Questlove won the that award or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think the story, I forget what it was, but the story behind what he won for it, everything was like amazing. And he was super moved by winning the award. And it's so overshadowed by those events. So I think that would be the real, real, like, downside of all that is, like, it really kind of took away from everyone's night, and made it kind of all about that moment. But I don't think it's like career ruining. Maybe he's lost some.
Where are Will's boys at? Let me just tell you, if you're up for Man of the Year and you did some shit like that, Jake, if I wasn't there, you'd have had 60 messages from old Vic Law saying, Jake, what the hell is going on, man?
I'm sure he did.
Bro, you'd have been like, I booked my flight. I'll be there in 3 hours.
I'm sure you did, man. Right there. I'm sure you did. Look,
bro, what's going on?
It's Hollywood. He went for it. I would say that the other sad thing that I do feel for him, like, no matter how happy, maybe he's just fine. He won the award. It just sucks that he wins that award for the first time, and that's not even what's discussed. It's the slap, you know.
That's what I mean.
It was your night. He made it his night one way or another, you know.
He was a favorite to win it. He could have held off. Like, that's what I'm saying. He knew he was gonna win the thing. He could have been like, all right, let me get the award, and then I'll have my moment. Like, he had just gotten the thing first, and then been like, all right, you know, let's, you know, Chris, come on. Like, he's worked with Chris before.
Something must have triggered him, because, you know, people have tried him probably for 40 years, you know, 30, 40 years, whatever. People have probably said more reckless stuff to him, probably worse. So, you know, he's held it together, because you never heard about Will Smith getting in any trouble or anything. So I don't know what it was about that moment, you know, with Chris Rock, with that joke, with what's going on with her, that, like, finally made him act. But, you know, he did. And I don't know. I don't think it's as big of a deal, but obviously it's something to talk about. And,
well, I hope this isn't true, but I've been seeing tweets and stuff saying, like, Jada came out and said that she didn't like Will's actions, and he didn't need to do that and all that stuff. No. If that's true,
I'm not buying. There's no, I'm not falling for anything.
That's true,
if she's throwing him under the bus, which I don't like, paraphrasing, you know, probably something made up, but, like,
that would be
crazy. He throws him under the bus. I'm not buying it.
That's why I told Carl. I was like, there's, if she was actually, like, kind of going against him and being like, nah, like, I don't support none of that, that would be some of the wildest shit ever. Like, it wouldn't even matter, like, what happened. If she, like, didn't turn her back, it would.
Yeah.
I'd be done. I'd be done with the whole Smith.
No, that'd be crazy. I'm not even going to get it.
Nah. It's like, nah.
No. It is what it is. It's over. And, you know, there will be, you know, consequences for his actions. But again, you know, I think I don't want to put too much stock into it. I think it's just kind of silly, the whole thing. How much attention is
I gotta call Charlie and Julie and see what they're saying about the whole thing.
You should actually have
Charles is big time now.
Well,
he doesn't answer his phone anymore. You know that.
Well, he keeps He thinks he's just so good at basketball. You gotta come when you come out to LA. You gotta play him one on one to remind him.
He said he doesn't play me one on one anymore, but I will though. I'll tell him. But
we could play 2-on-1. How about that? Me and you versus him.
Yeah, you bet. I'll be the defensive guy. You be the offense.
Yeah, can't be 3-and-D without the three.
That's a new thing. You can't.
Yeah, you can't say without the three. I can't believe you told me that right before this call.
You can't be 3-and-D without the three, man.
All right, man.
I tell you, you need the three.
Well, I appreciate you.
Easy.
We'll talk soon. Take care.
Absolutely. Have a good one.
This podcast is presented by Bristol Studio. Sound editing by Rashad Allen. Music by James Grissom.